Imagine pouring like $1 billion into a state-of-the-art AI data center in India.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right. And then you find out that a standard paperwork error, just a simple corporate structure mistake, gave the local government the legal right to tax your entire global revenue.
Which is pretty much a nightmare scenario.
It really is.
Yeah.
So welcome to the deep dive. We are super glad you're here with us today.
Absolutely.
Because if you are a professional currently, scaling operations, or maybe you're evaluating international markets, this is the exact conversation you need.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to understand how the massive hyperscale tech companies actually architect their global footprints, this is it.
Exactly. Our mission today is to explore this really fascinating, honestly, highly technical document from K&M India.
Yeah.
It's all about the 2047 data center tax holiday.
Right. And to sort of set the stage for you here, the year 2047 marks India's 100th year of independence.
It's a big milestone.
It's massive. And the government isn't just planning parades. They are systematically pushing to construct a multi-trillion dollar digital economy.
Multi-trillion with a T.
With a T, yes. So for US cloud providers, the hyperscalers and AI developers, this represents a generational infrastructure gold rush.
But I mean, extracting that gold.
Right, that's the hard part. It requires incredibly precise, almost surgical corporate architecture. You're basically navigating this crazy collision of massive capital expenditure, strict data localization mandates, and, well, the complex mechanics of global tax repatriation.
Okay, let's unpack this because setting up a global data center isn't just about shipping giant hard drives overseas and, plugging them into a wall.
No, not at all.
To look at it mechanically, it's like building a submarine. If you don't build the watertight bulkheads perfectly before you put the vessel in the water,
You're going to sink.
exactly. A single leak in the sales department will completely sink the engineering department. If your legal structure is porous, your intellectual property and your revenue will just drown in compliance penalties and taxes.
That submarine analogy is, it's really the perfect lens for this. You literally have to compartmentalize the risk.
Right.
The source material we're looking at outlines that data centers have officially been classified as critical infrastructure in India.
Which is a huge deal.
It's the golden ticket, really.
Yeah.
That classification unlocks long-term, low-cost funding. But more importantly, it grants access to these very specific, massive tax exemptions.
Especially if they're built in certain areas, right?
Yeah, particularly when these centers are built within special economic zones, what they call SEZs, or designated tech parks.
And we really should clarify for you, this isn't some brief, 6-month startup subsidy.
Oh, no.
These incentives operate on a 21-year horizon,
Yeah, 21 years.
which is wild. For any professional involved in like capital-intensive forecasting, having a 21-year runway of financial predictability is virtually unheard of in tech.
It changes the entire math of the project. I mean, we're looking at exemptions from the standard 25 to 30% corporate taxes.
Both the import stuff.
Right, they get duty-free server imports. When you're importing literally billions of dollars of specialized silicon, avoiding those import duties is a massive margin saver.
And then crucially, there are exemptions from electricity duties and cross-subsidy charges.
Which, that is honestly the hidden make or break factor in this entire industry.
Because data centers use an insane amount of power.
Exactly. They're basically giant power plants that just happen to process data. The electricity required to power, and more importantly, to cool a 50 megawatt AI facility is staggering.
Right, the cooling fans alone.
So by eliminating those state-level electricity duties and the cross-subsidy surcharges, the host country completely changes the profitability model for the operation.
Okay, so the subsidies are incredible. But this brings us to the core problem that the K&M document highlights.
The leaky bucket.
Yes, the leaky bucket. Because if the Indian government is handing out these massive 21-year tax breaks, why can't a U.S. multinational just open a standard, wholly owned subsidiary, plug in the servers, and start selling software?
Right, like normal companies do.
Yeah, exactly. Why does mixing your server costs with your local software sales create that leaky bucket? I mean, professionals use single corporate entities for international expansion all the time.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it really comes down to the mechanism of ring fencing.
Okay, ring fencing.
Yeah. The government is offering these incredible subsidies specifically to incentivize the physical infrastructure. They want the steel, the concrete, the raw computing capacity, the power grid.
We want the hard assets.
Exactly. They do not want to subsidize your standard SaaS subscriptions or your marketing department's payroll or, you know, your local sales commissions.
But wait, why couldn't a company just keep two separate ledgers internally? Like say, hey, here is the spreadsheet for the data center costs, and here's the spreadsheet for our software sales team. Why does it leak?
Because internal ledgers aren't a legal firewall. When a U.S. company comes in and uses a standard corporate structure, just one big wholly owned subsidiary, they're legally commingling those revenue streams on a single statutory balance sheet.
Right.
So when an auditor looks at that entity, they cannot clearly and legally separate the subsidized capital-intensive infrastructure activity from the heavily taxed high-margin sales activity.
It's all just mixed together.
And that ambiguity completely skyrockets your transfer pricing risk.
Okay, let's drill into that mechanism. Because transfer pricing risk is one of those terms that sounds like dry accounting jargon, but it's actually the battlefield where multinational profits are either won or lost.
It absolutely is. Transfer pricing refers to the rules around how different parts of a global company charge each other for goods and services.
Like internal billing.
Exactly. Tax authorities globally use what's called the arm's length principle. They want to ensure that if the Indian branch is providing compute power to the U.S. branch, they are charging a fair market price.
Like they would charge a random third party.
Right. So if you have the data center and the sales team tangled up in one entity, the local tax authorities will aggressively scrutinize how you allocate those costs.
And then the leak starts.
Yes. Your beautiful 21-year SEZ tax benefits start leaking out because authorities will basically recharacterize your revenue. They impose compliance penalties and they'll apply standard commercial grid rates to your power usage.
So, if a leaky bucket drains all your tax benefits simply because your sales team and your servers share a balance sheet, the only logical move is to basically take a legal hacksaw and cut the company in half.
Precisely. You have to sever the operation completely, and this is what the K&M India Advisory refers to as the dual entity model.
The dual entity model.
Yes, and it is the mandatory strategic blueprint for any U.S. cloud multinational entering this market.
Let's lay out the mechanics of this dual entity model for you, because it's actually fascinating. Basically, the U.S. parent company establishes two distinct, entirely separate Indian companies.
Right. Two completely different legal buckets.
First, you have Entity A. We can call it InfraCo, the infrastructure company. And InfraCo strictly holds the physical assets.
The hard stuff.
Yeah, it owns the real estate, the massive cooling systems, the land, the actual racks of servers.
Yeah.
It operates strictly B2B as a wholesaler. It functions exclusively as a compute lesser.
Right. InfraCo is the quiet, heavy lifting engine in the background. It honestly doesn't even talk to the public.
It just hums in the dark.
Exactly. And then you have Entity B, which we call OpCo, the operating company.
And OpCo is the face of the business.
Yeah.
It acts as the local reseller. It handles all the domestic sales, the marketing campaigns, the customer support. And crucially, it bills the Indian enterprises in their local currency, INR.
Yes, and structurally, separating the OpCo allows the enterprise to heavily utilize domestic data process outsourcing, or DPO, frameworks.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
Well, by pushing all the high headcount domestic customer management into the OpCo, it keeps the headcount and operational complexity of the heavily capitalized InfraCo to an absolute minimum.
Oh, I see.
InfraCo just sits there, like you said, humming away in the dark, qualifying for all those 21-year tax holidays without any messy retail operations muddying the waters.
Okay, but I have to challenge this from a purely professional scaling perspective.
Sure.
Because if you are a CFO or an operations director listening to this, running two completely separate corporate entities instead of one sounds like a total nightmare.
It does sound painful.
It's twice the administrative headache. You've got two sets of compliance filings, two boards, two audits. Isn't it just easier and, frankly, cheaper to let the sales team sit in the same building as the servers and just fight the auditors when they show up?
I mean, it is a completely valid pushback from a purely operational standpoint. Having everyone under one roof seems way more efficient.
Right.
But that logic completely collapses when it meets the severe legal reality of international tax law.
How so?
Because if a single entity touches both the physical hardware of the servers and the end user sales, you trigger what is known as permanent establishment, or PE risk.
Okay, let's go deep on permanent establishment. How exactly does a tax authority track and prove that? I mean, how do they connect those dots?
Well, think about it from the perspective of a local tax auditor. They are looking for the nexus of business activity.
The connection point.
Right. If you have a salesperson in Mumbai signing contracts with local clients, and those transactions are processed on a server sitting down the hall owned by the exact same company, the auditor links the two.
Okay.
The tax authority determines that your physical presence constitutes a permanent establishment. And the penalty isn't just that they tax the revenue you made in India.
Wait, it gets worse.
Oh, yeah. The nightmare scenario is that they might try to categorize the entire global revenue stream generated through those specific servers as taxable in India.
Wait a minute. So if an automated server node in India processes a highly lucrative transaction for a client sitting in London,
yep,
and you don't have this dual entity structure in place, India could legally argue, hey, the compute happened on our soil, inside an entity that also conducts local sales, so we want a massive cut of that London revenue.
Exactly, because the hardware execution and the contract authority were tangled up in one entity.
Wow.
So the tax net gets cast over the whole global operation running through that node.
That is terrifying for a global business.
It is, and that's why the dual entity structure acts as a literal legal firewall.
Yeah.
InfraCo just leases capacity. OpCo just sells locally. The auditor walks in, they see two completely severed companies.
So the firewall prevents the tax authorities from reaching through the Indian operation to grab the U.S. parent's global revenue.
Precisely.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. The administrative friction of running two companies is a microscopic price to pay compared to having your global revenue taxed twice.
Absolutely.
So we built the watertight bulkheads for the physical hardware, but we need to address the invisible cargo. Yeah, because a modern data center isn't just storing static websites anymore. We are talking about the artificial intelligence boom.
And this is where the stakes elevate from millions of dollars to billions. For U.S. hyperscalers, the raw compute power, you know, those massive server farms we just ring-fenced inside InfraCo, that is only half the AI equation.
Right. The algorithmic intellectual property is the other half. The models themselves, the training weights, the proprietary data lakes.
Yeah. And the massive, often overlooked risk during an India market entry is that AI models running and continuously training on those Indian servers might accidentally trigger a transfer of IP ownership to the Indian subsidiary.
Wait, seriously?
Yes. If the Indian entity is deemed to be actively participating in the creation or enhancement of the AI, the local tax authorities will argue that a portion of that $1 trillion IP now legally resides in India.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like hiring a brilliant world-class chef to cook in your restaurant's kitchen, but forcing them to sign a contract saying the recipe belongs to you forever. Like, no matter what new dish they invent while standing at your stove, you own the facility. So you are trying to claim you own the genius.
I love that analogy. It's spot on. The kitchen is the data center, and the chef's expertise is the AI algorithm.
Exactly.
You need to make absolutely sure that the restaurant owner, the Indian InfraCo in this case, doesn't get to legally claim ownership of a $1 billion recipe just because the algorithm processed data on their stove.
So mechanically, how do you protect the recipe? How do you put a legal firewall around an invisible algorithm? I mean, you can't put a fence around code.
Well, they utilize a highly specific structural framework called toll manufacturing.
Toll manufacturing?
Yes. Which is essentially a contract R&D model.
Okay.
Under this setup, the Indian InfraCo is legally defined merely as a captive service provider.
Captive service provider, meaning they are locked in to only serve the parent company, and they take on zero market risk.
Correct. They provide the raw compute power and the basic processing execution to the U.S. parent company for a fixed guaranteed markup. This is known as a cost-plus model. So mechanically, if it costs the Indian entity $100 million a year to run the servers, pay the staff, and cool the facility,
yeah,
they charge the U.S. parent $115 million. They make a clean, highly predictable 15% profit, which they pay standard local taxes on.
But wait, I have to push back here.
Go for it.
Let's say that AI model becomes the next global phenomenon. It becomes a $1 trillion asset generating massive global licensing fees.
Right.
Isn't the U.S. IRS or whatever global tax body going to be furious?
Right.
Won't they say, hold on, India did all the heavy computational lifting to train this model, but the Indian entity only got a measly 15% markup.
Yeah.
How does that not trigger international tax alarm?
See, that is the exact core in multinational tax strategists' debate, and the answer lies in who bears the risk.
Risk.
Under the toll manufacturing framework, the Indian entity takes on zero financial or entrepreneurial risk.
Oh, but they get paid either way.
Exactly. If the AI model fails completely, the Indian entity still gets paid its 15% markup just for running the servers.
Right.
The U.S. parent company provided the initial code, they directed the R&D, and they bore 100% of the financial risk of failure. In international transfer pricing, whoever bears the risk and provides the core IP gets to keep the residual upside.
Ah, because InfraCo is literally just following instructions. They are essentially a digital assembly line.
Exactly. InfraCo never assumes ownership of the intangible assets. It merely performs high-level processing services on hardware it happens to own.
That's brilliant.
It is. This mechanism ensures that the massive value generated by the AI models, the true intellectual property, remains legally domiciled in the United States.
Wow.
And simultaneously, because of that transparent, predictable cost-plus markup, the Indian entity remains perfectly compliant with domestic tax expectations.
You get a steady tax base. The U.S. keeps the IP.
Yeah, it is a brilliantly elegant equilibrium.
It really is an incredible piece of corporate architecture. It allows the U.S. company to tap into India's massive infrastructure subsidies and engineering talent without ever risking their core IP.
Right.
But this brings up a really crucial point about execution.
Timing is everything here.
Yeah, let's say I'm a professional, maybe a CEO listening to this. I hate upfront legal fees and I hate delays.
Everyone does.
Right. With this optimal blueprint laid out, why can't I just launch a standard company today, move fast, get the servers running, generate some revenue, and then pivot to this complex dual entity toll manufacturing setup once we are actually profitable? Why do it all on day one?
Because that is the ultimate temptation, to defer the complexity and the advisory costs until later.
Yeah, the standard Silicon Valley playbook is move fast and break things.
What's fascinating here is that the source document from K&M India issues a very severe warning against exactly that approach. Transitioning a standard single subsidiary into a dual entity structure after the fact is an absolute financial disaster.
Why? Mechanically, if I own 100% of the single company, shouldn't I be able to just internally reorganize my own assets into two companies? It's all my stuff.
Because the moment you try to split that single company into an InfraCo and an OpCo, you are legally executing an asset transfer.
Oh, I see.
You are taking real estate, heavily specialized cooling towers, and thousands of highly valuable servers, and legally selling them from one corporate entity to another.
Right. And the tax authorities are watching every single line item of that transfer.
Intently. Because those assets have usually appreciated in market value, or they have complex depreciation schedules attached to them.
So it's a taxable event.
A massive one. That transfer triggers massive capital gains taxes. Furthermore, moving real estate and infrastructure triggers incredibly high local stamp duties.
Ouch.
Yeah, you end up paying astronomical taxes just to move your own equipment from your left pocket to your right pocket.
So moving fast without a corporate advisor in this space doesn't break the market, it just breaks your entire profit margin.
It really does. The sheer friction involved in cross-border statutory reality is huge. When you are dealing with critical infrastructure, figuring it out later is the most expensive mistake you can make.
Right.
Getting the corporate architecture right before a single server arrives at the port is not optional. It is a fundamental financial imperative.
And this is exactly why the K&M India document emphasizes the absolute necessity of early specialized strategic advisory.
Yeah.
We're talking about the pre-incorporation phase.
Yes.
You can't just like download a generic template from the internet to start this business.
Definitely not.
You need specialists drafting custom articles of association that legally restrict InfraCo to a captive service model.
And you have to navigate the real-world friction of securing foreign direct investment FDI approvals from the Reserve Bank of India.
Oh, the RBI. How difficult is that process?
The RBI approval process is notoriously stringent. They want to trace exactly where the capital is coming from and exactly what it is funding. If your corporate structure is a tangled, single-entity mess, those approvals just stall out. You can't even open a local corporate bank account without proving your compliance architecture is sound.
Wow.
Once the concrete is poured and the capital is injected, the legal foundation is set. Like your analogy, you cannot easily retrofit a submarine once it's underwater.
You really can't. So let's synthesize this deep dive into corporate strategy for you. We started with the grand 2047 vision India's push to become a multi-trillion dollar digital superpower, backed by those incredibly lucrative 21-year tax holidays for critical infrastructure.
Which is an amazing opportunity.
It is. But we explored how a standard corporate structure creates a leaky bucket by commingling subsidized assets with taxable sales.
Right.
Which forces any scaling professional to adopt a dual entity firewall. You split the operation into a heavy lifting InfraCo and a customer facing OpCo to completely isolate your permanent establishment risk.
And then we transitioned from the physical to the intangible.
The software.
Right. We looked at how, in the era of artificial intelligence, protecting the physical servers isn't enough. You must protect the algorithms by utilizing a toll manufacturing cost-plus model.
The captive service provider.
Exactly. Which legally ensures the core intellectual property remains securely domiciled with the parent company.
And crucially, we unpack the mechanics of why all of this must be architected before entry. You cannot retrofit these structures without triggering catastrophic capital gains taxes and stamp duties.
Never figure it out later.
Right. If you take anything away from this discussion, it's this. Even if you aren't actively building a hyperscale data center right now, the underlying professional lesson is universally applicable.
Absolutely.
As you scale any operation cross-border, recognizing the need to strategically isolate your high-value IP from your daily operational liabilities is fundamental to your long-term survival.
It really is. Though this does raise a final, very important question, I think, and it's something I want to leave you to ponder.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've talked extensively about how the dual entity structure prevents permanent establishment risks by legally separating the physical hardware from the sales contracts.
Firewall.
But as AI becomes increasingly decentralized and cloud computing becomes entirely abstract, will the global definition of permanent establishment eventually shift away from physical hardware altogether?
Wow.
Like, in the next decade, will international tax laws adapt to tax the location of the data itself and where the bytes are consumed, rather than the location of the cooling fans and the server racks?
That is a massive paradigm shift to consider. I mean, if global tax codes stop caring about where the concrete building is located and start tracking where the digital value is actually flowing,
yeah,
that changes the entire blueprint for multinational scaling all over again.
It absolutely does. The entire architecture of global business will have to evolve.
And when it does, we'll be here to unpack it with you. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the mechanics of global infrastructure and corporate strategy. Keep scaling, keep questioning the mechanics of how things work, and we will catch you on the next one.